ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are going to discuss in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita symptoms and remedy for stress. As I was telling you the other day, there are so many valuable themes in Bhagavad Gita for the corporate. So here also we find some interesting series of verses. Some 3-4 verses we will recite from first chapter.
Arjuna uvacha drishtve mam svajanam krishna yujutsum samupasthitam sedanti mama gatrani mukham cha parishushyati.
This verse number is 1.28. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up.
Vepathuscha sharirene romaharshascha jayate gandhi vamsam sate hastat vakchaiva paridahyate.
My whole body is trembling. My hair is standing on end. My bow gandiva is slipping from my hand. And my skin is burning.
Nacha shaknam javasthatham gamati vachame manah nimithani cha pashyami viparitani keshava.
I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Krishna, killer of the Keshi demon. So Prabhupada writes here the writing here. This is in 1.28. As far as his soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposite party, forcing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver, and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see the fighting spirit. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. And then below, in the same paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, of course, he is a devotee, he is soft-hearted, Prabhupada says. And then towards the end he is saying, actually Prabhupada gives two angles and two shlokas. In this shloka, 1.28, he is telling that Arjuna is feeling these symptoms of compassion and crying for his relatives. And he is also saying all the symptoms of mouth drying up and body quivering and all that. It's all happening because of sympathy of Arjuna for his relatives. The next verse, Vepathuscha sharirene romaharshascha jayate, 1.29, there you will find Prabhupada is saying here, Arjuna's symptoms in this situation are out of material fear, namely loss of life. This is evident from other symptoms also. he became so impatient that his Gandhi Baba was slipping from his hands and his heart was burning. So he was feeling a burning sensation. See, these are all symptoms. Vepatuscha. Vepatu means the body is trembling. Sharire. Roma Harsha means the hair is standing on end. The Gandhi was slipping from his hands, all this. Takchaiva paridakhyate means body is burning sensation. And then Prabhupada is ending their purport saying, all these are due to your material conception of life. You see, Prabhupada gives another angle here. The previous purport one angle and here another angle. And then in the next verse, 1.30, Prabhupada is saying, such fearfulness and loss of mental equilibrium take place in a person who are too affected by material conditions. You understand what is material conditions? Sukha dukha. Sometimes happiness comes, sometimes there is suffering. In such situations, when happiness comes, one may jump up and down. Or when suffering comes, one may get broken down. So these are material conditions. Because material world arranges material conditions. So one is too affected by material conditions, he says. And then Prabhupada says below, everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will. The conditioned soul forgets that the real self-interest lies in Krishna or Vishnu. So forgetting this, what he does? Therefore, he suffers material pains. So, fearfulness and loss of mental equilibrium. So, Prabhupada says in these 2-3 verses, Arjuna feeling a great fear, seeing the fighting spirit of his relatives, and attachment for the bodies of the relatives and friends. These two are the main reasons. So, the symptoms that Arjuna faced are typical of a man under stress. They are very typical. That is why sometimes when we go to distribute Bhagavad Gita as it is, some people say, I am not interested. One of the things that I have experienced, by saying which people immediately buy the Bhagavad Gita. So I used to just show the cover of the Bhagavad Gita. And show them, see here, Arjuna is under stress. And the same verses I used to recite. And his lips are drying and body is quivering. And his body is burning, skin is drying up and all that. He is putting the Gandhi Baba down and is crying. One of the behavioral symptoms of stress is that uncontrollably one breaks down and cries out of fear or loss of mental equilibrium. And then Lord Krishna spoke the message of Bhagavad Gita, at the end of which Arjuna became free from stress. Again he took his Gandhi Baba down very courageously and boldly he fought the battle. And in the modern times also, we all are subjected to stress and practical symptoms are seen. If we want to rise above stress and fight the battle, which is actually the world of competition in the modern times, then we need the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Immediately they will take it. So I will show you some symptoms. Here is a book by Mr. M.K. Gupta from Pustak Mahal, How to Control Mind and Be Stress-Free. So in this book he quotes some symptoms. I'll read. You will see very similar symptoms. See, technically he says, what is stress? whenever we perceive any physical or psychological threat or challenge, we are under the grip of stress. Whenever our mind feels uneasy, restless, disturbed, agitated, tense, heavy or strained, we are said to be under stress. Correct? And then he's saying, effect of stress on the body. Whenever we experience stress, the stress mechanism is activated, which also is called a fight or flight response or alarm response. It is as if a red alert is declared in the body to meet the impending challenge or emergency. In this condition, the sympathetic component of, there is something called the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So, to explain it a little more in a simple fashion, the sympathetic nervous system activates different bodily components in order to compensate for the need of the situation. For that we have to understand that in our body we all need sustenance and protection, these two things. For sustenance, what we do? We eat food, we drink water, we need air to breathe, and we need a very proper condition to live, say temperature of the atmosphere and everything. So sustenance is that. Protection is from any foreign agents that may harm us. So we need to protect ourselves. So every living body you will find, like yesterday in the bathroom I found an earthworm, like water snake or earthworm. So we are trying to get that out of the bathroom, So as soon as you touch it with a stick or something, immediately it withdraws. You have seen that becomes afraid. Somebody is going to kill me. Actually, we never wanted to kill it, we wanted to take it out. But as soon as it finds a foreign element, every living being in this world, it perceives the foreign element as either a friend or enemy. He is favorable to me or he is my enemy. Every living body keeps on, researching and understanding only either of the two. It cannot be anything else. It cannot be third. It can only be either of the two. Is it a friendly stimuli or enemy stimuli? Like that one may judge like that. So, as soon as you detect that it is an enemy stimuli, immediately there is stress. Where is the stress? In the mind. And why there is stress in the mind? Because the mind is now in a state of tension, it goes to intelligence and says, I think there is some threat for me. Immediately you hear a big sound. A couple of days ago we were in Bombay. Peaceful program was going on. Very, very wonderful program. At the end of the program we heard a huge thudding sound as if a thunderbolt is falling to the ground. Just a little distance away. It was 9:45, bomb blast. Isn't it? So once that sound comes, everyone is afraid. Why there is fear? Because it may drop here also. That kind of fear is there. Or when you peep out of the window and you find there is no bomb, somebody's scooter tire has burst. And you see that. And then you find the fellow got down from the scooter and is dragging the scooter. Then it turns into an amusement for you. No more tension for you. Because the mind gets tension when there is a perception of threat. And then as soon as that situation is understood by the intelligence says, don't worry, there is no danger. Then the mind becomes calmed down again. So, this happens in every situation. Whenever there is a threat, the mind becomes red alert. And it consults the intelligence. And then when the situation is cooled down, then the mind becomes calm. And this is the duty of the mind. And how the situation can be cooled down? For that, the intelligence makes arrangements in the bodily organs by a certain way by which it takes some action to cool down the situation. Say for example, you see a snake, immediately red alert. Mind becomes alert, it goes into the intelligence, then gives order to the mind that is actually a snake, it is harmful to you. You order the senses to take a stick and beat the snake. then immediately the arrangement is made in the body, as I told you, SNS, we call it, sympathetic nervous system. The arrangement is made that the blood, instead of flowing to stomach, it flows to the hands. And the tips become strong. You take a stick. You will see enormous strength in your hands at that time, when there is a fear. And leg also becomes enormously strong, so you can run very, very fast. And your throat becomes powerful with acute sound. You shout loudly, snake or something like that. Fire! Help me! Or whatever. You can shout very, very loudly. And the pupils become dilated. So you can get a clearer vision of what the situation is. So that you can take action. And the heart starts palpitating very fast. Very, very, very fastly. So that more oxygen can be pumped in. So that there will be more blood circulation. All these things are done by the SNS, sympathetic nervous system. So that you get more strength to take an action. And once the snake is beaten up, you are seeing the tail is moving this way, that way, and everything. Beat, beat, beat again and again. And then finally it is completely dead. And then you find there are no life symptoms. Then immediately what happens, the mind becomes cooled down. Then the blood flow becomes normal and everything cools down after that. Then you understand how it happens? So whenever a threat is perceived, these actions take place. So he says here, what are the symptoms of stress? He says, breathing becomes faster to provide more oxygen to body. Stress chemicals such as adrenaline and all are released directly into the blood. Heartbeat is increased, blood vessels are dilated, sweating increases, muscle tightness and tension are increased. Mouth dries up because the salivary glands dry. See? Correct? Arjuna says, no? Mukham cha paridahyate. All these things, symptoms. See, he is saying, shaking of the limbs, cracking in voice, he is saying, correct? Vepatrasya sharire me, shaking of limbs. All the blood is diverted away from the skin. All that. So, we are finding similar symptoms in Arjuna's body also. Now, when you see, when stress arises in these situations, it's not that such a stress is bad. Actually, stress, this kind of arousal of the symptoms is very good. Why? Because for taking action, you need that strength. So it's appropriate. But when it becomes a problem, there are certain problems in this world which mind perceives and goes to intelligence for consulting it, but intelligence says, sorry sir, I have no solution for that. Say for example, job situation in your company. You are finding, like I heard that one of the Asian Paints, they laid off some 13,000 employees. So Tata Motors also, I heard, thousands of employees have been laid off. So when the mind hears the news, so many employees are being laid off, so what happens? There is a fear. Oh, I have a job. Sometimes I may be doing my job well also, but the company may be planning to downsize. And the boss may feel that although you are a good person, we are unable to offer you salary. So we want you to quit. So one may lose the job. So there is a fear of losing the job. This is a threat. Now, because of which stress arises in the mind. So what is the solution for this? Any answer is available for this? Yeah? Any answer? When there is a fear of being laid off, is there any immediate answer for the solution for this? There is no solution for this immediately. Which means, the mind has perceived a problem, the mind is in tension, and all these symptoms happen. Time to time, whenever we hear a news of somebody laid off, breathing, and the vepatrasya sharire me, everything happens, all these things happen with us. Should not happen to me. So, at the same time, the intelligence is unable to sort out the problem because it is an indefinite problem. Because of which, we live under constant stress. You understand? Similarly, financial situation. For example, somebody has put money in a bank which offers big interest, but then you hear that some other similar bank became Diwala, bankrupt. So you're very afraid, yeah? Again, you know, your friends tell you about that and you think, maybe I should withdraw the money and put it in a government bank. But in the mind tells you, what is the use of government bank? They give 6 or 7%. But if I put in private bank, I can get 20-24%. And then the mind says, let it be in private bank only. But then the intelligence says, and the private bank can go Diwala, be ready. The mind gets tension. So, as long as you don't take any action, is there any remedy for that? No. Then we live under constant tension and stress. You understand, huh? Yeah. Similarly, strain in relationship with a devotee or with a colleague in the office. Once the relationship becomes strained, every day you go to office, you look at him, he looks at you from a distance, that's a little strain. Because the problem is not sorted out. We have the problem. So, sometimes husband, wife, the relationship becomes more and more strained and ends up in divorce. And in a similar way, the relationship with other people and the colleagues in the office can become strained. And it may make us feel very unpleasant emotions when we look at them or when we have to interact with them. That also causes stress. Because as soon as you see an agent, a foreign element which you feel is against you, not a friendly agent for you, then the threat comes. While dealing with certain people, you feel threatened. You are not comfortable. With other people, you are very comfortable. So again, the stress arises. So this is called a threat. So there is also two things. Perceived threat and actual threat. Actual threat means, for example, if you find a snake in front of you, it's actual threat. If there is a fire in the kitchen, it's actual threat. It's a possibility. You go to a doctor, doctor says you have cancer. It's a real threat. Terrible. And it's not an imaginary threat. It's a real threat. But there are also many imaginary threats called as perceived threat. Say, for example, somebody doesn't wish you good morning or something in the office. So it's a perceived threat. So there can be many perceived threats. Here also, what Arjuna is undergoing, Prabhupada is calling it as perceived threat, this fear. Actually, there is no fear for him. There is no need of any fear for him. Lord Krishna is standing by his side, who is the father of all religious principles, and he is actually guiding him in the battle. And Arjuna has to just go with him, that's all. And Krishna tells him, kill all these people, and he has to kill. But he is facing fear. Why that fear? Fear comes. I'll read. He says here, one of the major challenges. When the consciousness remains at a low level, one's identity remains totally confined and narrow. One's life is always occupied with I, me and mine. This creates for us a sense of separation from all that we define as not I. This separation creates discomfort, disharmony, and at times a feeling of loneliness and isolation. The more narrow is one's concept of identity, the more insecure he will be, feeling small in this world, which seems large and threatening. He looks himself as an isolated being struggling against the rest of the world. Such a person works primarily to achieve security and his chief concern is self-protection. You understand? He A person with a narrow identity can't see a larger pattern of his life. I would like to expand on this point. You see, Prabhupada says that the why Arjuna is stricken with fear, as you see here, exhibiting all the symptoms, because he has taken the control of everything in his own hands. That is the main problem. He is actually feeling the fear. Of course, he is not incompetent or impotent to fight this battle. He has the ability. He can kill all of them. But here, Arjuna is not taking into account the Krishna factor. See, when the soul is cut off from Krishna, then he considers himself and his own bodily relatives. I and my relatives. That's all Arjuna is seeing. And where is Krishna here? Krishna factor is not taken into account here. He's forgotten Krishna completely. So this is one of the first reasons why Arjuna is facing the fear. Like we are like one. Krishna is like infinity. So one plus infinity is infinity. Then you have infinite strength when you have Krishna with you. Then you can do miracles. Anything, there is nothing impossible for us. But when we are alone, when we are not with Krishna, then we find ourselves insignificant, and we cannot have the courage, strength, even direction, even guidance when we are alone without God. We become like a boat in the Atlantic with no compass, which is wandering in all directions, and the boat doesn't know where to go like that. So that is the condition of Arjuna, and also he is considering about the battle which he has to fight himself, because he doesn't know Krishna is in control. This is the most vital aspect of Karma Yoga. In Karma Yoga, one should give up the egoistic feeling of the doership. I am the doer. One should give up that feeling. That's a very, very primary thing. While doing the activity, one should give up the egoistic feeling that without me this work cannot go on. I only can do this work, or I am great in doing this work, and the whole world will come to know that I am outstanding in this work. This kind of egoistic feeling one should give up. And after having done the work, when you complete the work, one should be detached from the fruits. One should have a detachment from the fruits. One should think that I have completed the work, keep it aside, and go to the next work. But not only one should be detached from the fruits, one should take the credit of the fruits and offer it to Krishna. These three things should be done. While doing the work, give up the egoistic feeling of I am the doer. And having done the work, be detached from the fruits, knowing that the brain that I use and the ingredients that I use, they all belong to God, not to me. So be detached. Don't accept the proprietorship or ownership of the fruits. And thirdly, offer the fruits to Krishna. Once you do that in Karma Yoga, that is what is taught in Bhagavad Gita. So when one gets into a doership mode, that I am the doer, that egoistic feeling comes, then one cannot see, when I feeling comes, then Krishna goes to background. When you put Krishna in the front, then I and mine goes to background. You understand? In the Vedanta, Vedavyasa says there are two things that lead to bondage, I and mine, he says. And there are two other things which lead to liberation. What are they? Not I, not mine, he says. Not me, not mine. So, when we think in terms of I and mine, then Krishna goes to the background and we become proud, we get the egoistic feeling that I did it, I am the doer. That actually occupies our mind a lot, you can easily see. You find here, if one knows how Krishna is the controller, this fear will not come. First of all, who arranged the battle? Krishna, yeah, he went as Shanti Dut, and then he found that there was no Shanti. The battle had to be done. And ultimately battle was decided. And is Krishna an ordinary human being or extraordinary human being? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, we know there is a verse in Vishnu Sahasranam which says, I'll tell you that verse. Jausa chandrarka nakshatra kandishobur mahodadihi vasudevasya viryena vidridani mahatmanah sasurasura gandharva sayakshora garakshasam jagat vashevar tatedam krishnasya sacharacharam. So he says, Krishnasya sacharacharam. This universe with the characharam, moving and non-moving beings. And then it says, Dyau, Sa, Chandra, Arka, Kam, Disha, Bhur, Maho, Udadi. It is saying, the sky, the stars, the moon, the sun, the directions, the oceans, and the world with Panchamahabhutas, all these things. And then he says, Sasurasura Gandharva, the Suras, Asuras, the demigods and the demons. Sasara Asura Gandharva, Sayaksha, Yakshas, Uraga means the snakes, Nagas. Sayaksha Uraga Rakshasam, the Rakshasas. Jagat Vashe means, Vash means what? Control. Jagat Vashe, the Jagat consisting of all these agents is under the Vash of Krishna, it says. Jagat Vashe, Vartadedam, Krishnasya, Sacharacharam says. It's completely under control of Krishna. And Krishna also says that, no? Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti says. I am in control of everything. So one should visualize this, that everything is moving and acting under the supervision of Krishna. Krishna is watching from the top, and all the planets are revolving, and all the asuras, gandharvas, yakshas, rakshasas, kimpurushas, vadyagaras, charanas, everyone is doing their activity. Indra, Chandra, Vayu, Varuna, all of them are doing their activity. The wind is blowing, as that verse says, Madhubayat, Vati, Vatoyam, Suryas, Tapati, Madhubayat. Out of fear for me, the sun is rising in the morning, he says, and setting in the evening. Out of fear for me, the wind is blowing. Out of fear for me, the god of showers, Indra is bringing water in the form of rains, isn't it? The flowers are blooming in the morning, the crops are growing, the seasons are changing, and all the minerals are produced in the earth, and the Navaratnas are produced in the oceans. All these things are happening around us. And the Lord is saying, it's all actually done by my glance. When I glance at the nature, all these things are happening. So, this is the first thing one should be convinced that this world is conducted by the supervision of the Supreme Lord. And I am not doing anything. I am simply a witness. I am just watching things happening. That's the very first thing we should know. God is doing great things. In Tamil, there used to be a song, beautiful song. In one of the movies, they were showing how when the song goes like this. Naan asaindal asayum ahila mellame. He's singing. When I move, the whole world will move, he says. When I stop, the whole world will stop. So the Lord's hand is like a magic wand. And the Lord says, move now. Immediately, birds are flying in the sky. The oceans are, having high tides. The wind is blowing. The seasons are changing. People are moving here and there. And the three modes of material nature nourish the whole material world, due to which all the living entities become very active. They're running here and there and doing their material activities. And some of them are doing spiritual activities. And the whole world becomes very activated. And the Lord says, stop now. Now it's time for Pralaya. Then everything comes to a halt. Isn't it? The whole world comes to a halt. Then the Pralaya comes and takes over. Everything is devoured. Bhuta grama sevayam bhutva bhutva pralayate. One should learn to see these things from a larger perspective than be narrow-minded with I and mine. My home, my wife, my children, my job, my desk, my... Isn't it? My laptop, my suitcase, my scooter, my pen, my dress, I and mine. So, one has to see from a larger perspective. Bhutva grama sevayam, bhutva bhutva pralayate. In the pralaya time, all are destroyed and again they are recreated. Again, what is that verse? Sarva sarva bhutani. No. Sarva yo. No. There is a 9th chapter. Prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpada visajamyam. Here it is there. Prakritim samavashtabhya visajami punah punah bhuta gramamam krishnam avasham prakritir vashat. 9.8. The whole cosmic order is under me, under my will. It is automatically manifested again and again. Under my will, it is annihilated at the end. Achamam tani karmani vandana jidananjaya udasina vadasina masaktam teshu karmasu maya adyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. You see, Krishna is saying all these verses. So, one can see that on a large scale in this universe, great things are happening. Not only that, great things are happening at a large scale, even at a small scale, like my own body, if I see how the body is functioning, it's happening under Krishna's will. The hair is growing in my body. For example, you all have hair. Do you know how many hairs you have in the body? Huh? Is that happening? Are we growing it ourselves? Did you make any arrangements for growing the hair? It's growing on its own. The nails are growing. The body is growing also. When you put the food, Krishna says, Aham Vaishwana Robhutva Praninam Dekamashita. He says, when you put the food in the stomach, who is the one who is digesting it? Pachami Annam Chaturvidam. He says, I digest your food, Krishna says. That means he is digesting the food in all of our stomachs. Can you imagine? In the belly of all the living beings. Yeah. So, in fact, in our body, there are innumerable chemical reactions and bodily changes going on, which are not under our control. They are all conducted by the Supreme Will. Can you imagine? All the body is ours. Body is given to us. But they are happening in this body. Yeah. Did any of you choose your face cut when you were born? Amol Bandhan, you chose your face cut? Yeah. It is awarded to us. We didn't cut our face to get a face cut. According to the way we want, yeah. It's given to us, yeah. Did any of you choose your pigment of the color of your skin when you were born? Of course, if you were given opportunity, you must have chosen a very fair skin. Isn't it? We didn't choose it. It's given to us. So it is happening at the Supreme Will. And everyone has a different type. Somebody has a teeth like this, coming out like this. Yeah, it's all awarded. Isn't it? So, the Supreme Will, not only at a larger scale, we can see the whole universe, and we can also see this one body. What we have, yeah. And this is not in our control at all, this body. In youth, we generally become very proud that this is my body. And we keep looking at our face in the mirror. How my body looks, how my face looks and everything. But actually it's not in our control. Many times we see if our body, we may get a fracture in the hand or leg. It takes such a long time to set it right. Sometimes you get diseases. Sometimes even chronic illnesses and all that in the body. It's not in our control. Many times even doctors are not able to cure certain diseases. They say, sorry, I will try my best, but ultimately it's in God's hands. They say like that. So, why an intelligent person should contemplate on how things are in Krishna's control, not in my control. Once you think about it. When Prabhupada was in Honolulu, standing near the beach, ocean side, along with some few disciples, and there were some planes flying, because there was an airport nearby. So one disciple of Prabhupada taking the role of a scientist, he asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, is it not that modern man has made tremendous advancement in science? Prabhupada said, what is so great about it? He said, yeah, it seems that he practically has gained control over the whole world. He was telling. Prabhupada said, control? What do you mean? What kind of control he has? And then what? You see the planes that are flying above. On the top of our heads we can hear the sound of the planes going. Is man not very advanced? That he is having control over material elements, control over nature like this. Prabhupada said, what is such a great control? When the petrol is finished, it has to come down. Prabhupada said, that is his control, he said. And the disciples still argued. He said, but then Swamiji, still he has some control at least. At least till the petrol is there, it is going up in the sky, isn't it? At least he has some control. Prabhupada said, some control means no control. Prabhupada said, because God means absolute control. That is the meaning of God. God means he has absolute freedom. That's the meaning of God. As soon as we are controlled by somebody above us, then we are not God. Very easy to understand. As soon as we are controlled by somebody, that means we are a tiny Ishwar. Like we see, there are different levels of controllers, right? Ant is also a controller. You know, we are controllers. Prime Minister of India is a controller. You know, Indra is a controller. Brahma is a controller. So if you see the different levels of controller, the ultimate controller is Krishna. Ishwara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme controller. What is the supreme controller? No, there is no one who can control him. There is no power to control him. That is the meaning of God. So we have to also contemplate on this, that ultimately Krishna is the supreme controller and everything happens according to his will. And all the living beings in this world, they all are moving and acting and working by the energy supplied by him, by the facilities and ingredients that are given by him. That's what we are taking from this world and using. Everything that we use, like Jambavan, when he was glorifying Krishna, he said this. He said, my dear Lord, all the material elements that the living entities use in this material world are supplied by you. And all the talents, the brain and the hands and legs that they use for exploiting these material elements, that is also given by you only. And all the inventions that the scientists do, because of which the scientists are glorified in this world, they also get the ideas to do invention only supplied by you. That is all supplied by you, everything. So one has to say this. And everything is under your grip of, everything is in your control. One should know that. Sometimes even the demigods forget this. What is because we tiny living entities. And there is a story, Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes it, I think, in one place. The demigods once forgot the hand of Krishna in their life. There was a battle between demons and demigods, and demigods emerged victorious. You know, when you become victorious, you become intoxicated. They became so proud that we won the battle with the demons. So all the demigods were going with their wives, telling their wives, what a great hero am I. You know, I have won the battle. Like, you know, every demigod was telling his wife that it was only because of me we won the battle. All other guys were all useless cowards. It was me. I sent this astra, that astra, and I won the battle. They were declaring their heroism. So when the Supreme Lord saw this, oho, you all are so proud. He wanted to teach them a lesson. And then he called for all the demigods. All he did was a very simple thing. He just took a small grass and he put it on the front. And he told, one by one demigods were called, why you come here? What's your power? The Lord asked. Why, you said, I can blow anything, anywhere. In fact, I blow huge clouds, which are several kilometers radius. I can blow them from south to north or something. And he said, oh, you are so powerful, blow this small blade of grass. And the Vayu started with full power. But the air was going in all sides except moving the grass. The grass could not be moved even a millimeter. It remained where it was. And the Vayu felt so ashamed, he looked here and there. Where am I? My wife is watching me. And he ran away from there. After that. Then Agni was called, what's your power? The Lord asked. Agni said, I can burn anything down to ashes. I have burnt big buildings down to ashes. I can burn down huge forests into ashes. Oh, really? Burn this one blade of grass. And Agni also enveloped from all sides. He just couldn't approach it at all nearby. He felt ashamed and ran away. So one by one they were all called like this. At last Indra was coming there from a distance. And Parvati was standing. And Indra asked Parvati, what is going on there, my dear mother? I am seeing there's a huge crowd of demigods. I was busy going back to my Indraloka, and I heard the news that Lord is calling us all. What's happening there? So she said, don't go there, you will be ashamed. Lord is humiliating everyone one by one. He is proving to the world how not even a blade of grass can move without his sanction. From there only it started, this famous statement. Not even a blade of grass can move without his sanction. Yeah. So all the demigods got a good realization that day. That everything is happening under Krishna's will. So sometimes the demigods think, actually, you know, we are doing great things and the Lord needs us, they used to think. Here Lord proved to them, actually I don't need you. I have kept you in this seva. Why? So that you can become purified. It's not that, you know, sometimes when we do some help for someone, we think, you know, I have done this help. No. If you are helping someone, immediately you should forget what help you gave others. You immediately forgotten. Why? God doesn't need anyone's help for doing anything at all. He can single-handedly do everything. He has the potency, he has the power, but still he uses it as instrument. Why? So that we can get an opportunity to serve him and become purified. Yeah, we should know that always. It is for our purification that God has given us. And if we become purified, we can go back home, back to Godhead. So for our benefit, we are doing Lord's service. That should be remembered. And ultimately, even for doing that service also, all the strength and stamina and intelligence and buddhi, shakti, everything is given by him only. We should remember that always. So this realization is important. So when one can see that in this world great things are happening, small things are happening, there are small things happening which is beyond my vision also, at a microscopic level, there are things happening. And there are things happening at a macroscopic level which is beyond our vision also. And everything is being controlled by Krishna. Everything is moved and made to act by Krishna. The whole world is functioning very smoothly by his supervision and order. Who am I? I am simply insignificant. We should never consider ourselves indispensable. Without me things cannot move. We should never think like that. You know this... did I tell you once the story of the king who... I told you here, I told in Varangal voice, in somewhere I was sharing. You all have heard the story of the king who considered himself indispensable. Do you know that? How many of you know? You were there in Varangal when I told that? Varangal fellow is here, that's why. Anybody else knows that? Others don't know, so I'll briefly tell. Once upon a time there was a king who thought himself to be the doer, manager, controller of everything, and he thought that all the people are dependent on me, the whole country is moving and acting by my direction, my supervision. He was very proud with a raised nose, always was thinking. See, when you become very proud, you know, you become very intoxicated. So the minister was a very buddhiman, very intelligent man. So once the king was telling the minister that, you know, just see how wonderful I am doing things. The minister said, my dear sir, I am sorry to tell you, it's not that without you things can't happen in this world. And the king got angry. Hey, what are you saying? It's me who supplies all ideas. It is me who does all activities in this world. I only sanction things. I have such a kajana. I have such army. I have such people. What are you saying? That without me things can go on. If I am not available here, then this whole country will become like a body without, you know, any breathing. If the body doesn't breathe, what will happen? It will die. So the whole country will be like a body without soul. And the minister laughed and said, sir, I will give you a nice suggestion. He said, just for about 5 days, because he was like Akbar Birbal, you know, very intimate king and minister. So the minister was very friendly with the king. So he had no fear to tell him the truth. Minister said, you take off the robes of the king, and you put the robes of a mendicant, sadhu, and then you go to the temple, mandap, and you live in the mandap there. I will arrange to send you food and everything, 3 times a day, you have nothing to worry. Just for a week or so, you stay there and watch your country, how it is moving, he said. And it was too much for the king. How can I give up everything and wear this dress? No, you are only doing a drama for 1 week. Do that. King agreed. So he put on the robes and then he went to the mandap. And the first day passed, and immediately the king sent the king in the mendicant's dress sent a chit to the minister. Do you want me to come back? There must be a lot of difficulty in managing the things and arranging things. The minister said, don't worry, there is no problem. You stay there. As long as we don't call you, you stay there. And then the second day, what happened? The neighborhood country, the neighborhood king came to know that the king is missing. And taking advantage of the opportunity, what he did? He waged the war. And as soon as the news came, this mendicant king became afraid. He asked the minister, I heard that he is waging a war. You need me to come now? He said, don't come, you be there only. Then the Yuvraj, he was made the king, next king. And then Yuvraj was just a 12 or 13 year old boy. Then he led the whole army. There was a terrible battle. In that battle, Yuvraj won, although he was a young boy. And he came back with great victory shouts and everything. All people showered flowers, they garlanded. And all this was being watched by that mendicant, king. He was seeing the processions going and brahmanas chanting the Vedic mantras and the boy, his own son, going on the back of a huge elephant and so many chariots following and thousands of people following. And all the people were praising the Yuvrajis. They were saying that although your father is missing now, you are doing better than your father also. They were glorifying him and everything. And then they said, we'll coronate you as the next king. The arrangements were going on and everything. The king was watching all these things to his great amazement. First day the king became very restless. Then he told the minister, please allow me, I want to come back. Please allow me. Then the minister said, okay, come back now. So when the king came back and he wore the dress and everything, he saw, not only the Yuvraj had actually managed the war situation, he even had a meeting with all his ministers and everyone. Country was moving very smoothly. The king was surprised. Minister told him, you see, this is the world, the material world. When one person goes, then that place gets filled up by someone else. Ultimately, God is the person who runs the whole material world. It's not in your hands or my hands. You know the law of displacement of water, our Archimedes' law. You know, you put a mug or something in the water, then the water level rises. You remove it, immediately it's called as water displacement law. Immediately the gap is displaced by other water, you'll find. Like that. Similarly, we find that it's not that we are indispensable. Without us, this world cannot move. World will go on, always. If we are there, then we can become an instrument in doing some work for God. On behalf of God, we can do some good work. If we are not there, then somebody else will do our work. And the world will go on. It's not that without us, the world cannot go on. So, the story explains this, illustrates this very important point. But when one thinks, I am the doer, here in this situation we find Arjuna is very fearful. Why? He has taken control of the situation in his hands without taking into account Krishna factor. You understand, no? If one understands that Krishna is in control and I am his instrument, and Krishna is a great God, he controls the whole universe. Krishna shows in 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita the Vishwarupa Darshanam. Whole universe is arrayed on his body. And not even a blade of grass can move without his sanction. And he is watching everything. And his eyes are everywhere. And how are his eyes never blink. That is one of the characteristics of Paramatma's eyes. Paramatma's eyes never blink. Our eyes keep blinking. Chakshur yasya narishyati, Bhagavatam says. The eyes never blink. And not only that, his eyes can see everywhere simultaneously. That is the power of his eyes. His eyes are everywhere. Sarvato akshi, shiro mukham. And the eyes can see simultaneously all places at all times, at every moment, I can see. So, if one can understand God's greatness, and here that Supreme Lord Krishna is riding the chariot of Arjuna. So, there is no reason for Arjuna to become fearful and run away from the battle. Like I was telling about the fight or flight response, Arjuna wants to go for the flight mode. Flight means run away from the battle. He doesn't want to fight out the battle. He wants to run away from the battle. He is fearful, seeing the material loss in the situation. So, same as applicable to any of us, like if you are working in a company, for example, if I am put in a situation where sometimes there may be overload of things to be done. Sometimes we face an overload of tasks to be completed, deadlines to be completed. Sometimes we see somebody, you hear from someone that somebody insulted, that you are incompetent or something. For someone to hear that I am incompetent is very painful. Who said I am incompetent? Which fellow said? I'll finish him. No. Actually, none of the jivas are competent. All are incompetent. Only Krishna is the only one competent. And he is making everyone function. Balam balavatam chaham. Buddhir buddhimatam asmi. Tejas tejas vinamaham. Shabdakke paurusham drushu. I am the ability in man, Krishna says. So Krishna can make someone who is incapable to do very great things. Very powerful things Krishna can do if he wants. Yeah. Like, Bhishma Pitamah was equivalent to 1,000 Arjunas. Do you know? Yeah. He was so powerful. He was so mighty. And Karna, Bhishma, Karna, Drona. What kind of Maharathis they were. Parikshit Maharaj was asking Shukadeva Goswami, how is it that my grandfather Arjuna, he is like a small tiny fish in front of the warriors like Bhishma, Drona, who are like Timingalas. In that ocean. How did he cross over this ocean of Kaurava Sainya Sagaram? Kaurava Sainya Sagar. Kaurava Sena. How did he cross over and defeat all of them? And Chaudhary Goswami said it is simply because of Krishna. Krishna empowered him. If Lord empowers, we can do miracles. If Lord withdraws the empowerment, we can do nothing. Like I am speaking a lecture. If Krishna empowers me, then I can speak good things that will benefit me and others. If Krishna withdraws the empowerment, I want to say something, you can't say anything. You have no power. Not even one word will come out of the mouth. Yeah. So, it's all empowerment. When Lord empowers someone, they can do things. So when you understand that God is in control, and He empowers all the living beings to do things, and He is the actual doer, and we are all just instruments to assist in His mission. Ultimately, this yuddha is a dharma yuddha, Kurukshetra. And Krishna wants it to happen. And I am simply an instrument in Krishna's hands. And He is telling me, my dear Arjuna, come to the battle, I will take you and you fight the battle. I have to just fight. But what happened to Arjuna, in the beginning you find, Senayor Vyor Madhye Ratam Sthapayame Achyuta. He is telling, oh my dear Krishna, take my chariot in between the two armies, and station it there so that I can assess the strength of both the armies. Who all have come? Let me see. Now Arjuna is taking the whole battle under his control. And Krishna gives a mild smile. Then, and he goes and staying. Doesn't say anything. And Arjuna is looking here, looking there. Then he is seeing, oh, my uncle, my grandfather, my brother, my relatives, friends, they all are arrayed. Now we come to the second reason, which is attachment. First is the fear, I told you. Second is the attachment. Attachment to what? Attachment to bodily relationships. So, say for example, if you are a high court judge, and your uncle is on one side, on the other side you find another man. So they both are fighting the court case, and you find that your uncle is on the wrong side, and you have to levy him some fine of say some 1 lakh rupees or something, and the other man will get the 1 lakh. So what would you do? Many times people, that's what you call as nepotism. Nepotism means favoring one's relatives. So one may think, how can I help my uncle to escape this fine, because after all he is my uncle. You may feel like that. One can, and people do that sometimes. In fact, some people even bribe the high court judge also sometimes. They try to bribe and try to get a decision in favor of their side. people try to do such things. So, here also Arjuna is in a similar situation. He knows that the grandfather and the brothers like, cousin brothers like Duryodhana and other people in the battle, and Karna, Drona and all these people. Drona was his martial teacher. Bhishma was his grandfather. There was his uncle, Shakuni. And there were also other brothers, cousin brothers like, you know, Duryodhana and other kings and everyone. So when Arjuna saw all of them, he became very pained at heart. He could not fight the battle because he was attached to their bodies, material body, material relationship. He could not fight the battle. Again the same point. We should not become carried away by the material relationships. Our connection with Krishna is eternal relationship. Krishna will never die, we will never die, and our relationship with Krishna will never die. Whereas with bodily connections, like our relationship with mother, father, brother, sister, relatives, friends, this is a temporary connection which will be finished at the time of death. Then we take the next body, we are born in a new family. Now, we are so attached to our current mother and father. Ask yourself, what are you doing for your previous lifetime mother and father? We don't even know which was our previous mother, previous father, where are they living? We don't even worry about the duty. Because in the material world, we keep on changing from one situation to another, moving from one body to another, like that. So, one should not become swayed by bodily relationship and give up one's dharma. One should not do that. Here his dharma was to fight the dharma yuddha battle. But he wants to give up the dharma yuddha because he is attached to his own mother. It's somewhat like what, when the Kargil war comes, a boy becomes very afraid of the war and he goes to his mother and mother is crying, son is crying and they are closing the door and saying, I will not go to the battle because I love my mother and father very much. It's foolishness. Because the army people will come and call you, hey, come on, come out. Now we are going for the battle now. The big truck is ready. Load the truck and carry your weapons. Go and fight the battle. He's saying, no, my mother is crying, I am also crying. Foolishness. One should execute one's duty. One should be ready to go. And the bodily attachment to mother, father, relatives, friends should be cast away when one has to do such a dharma. So, the symptoms of Arjuna feeling distress and hand shivering and mouth drying up and, you know, tears coming in his eyes, hair turning on end, all these things are because of bodily attachment to his relatives, which is also condemned. So, to talk practically in our practical life situation, both these things have great relevance. Like I was telling you about, first we will say a few things about fear. Whenever we are put into fearsome situations, we should immediately invoke the remembrance of the Supreme Lord, remembering Him to be the Supreme Controller. What is impossible for Krishna? Akartum kartum sarvata kartum, it is there. Krishna can do what is possible for us, and Krishna can do what is impossible for us, and Krishna can do something beyond possible and impossible also. Which cannot be even conceived by our mind. Krishna can do such things. So, we should take His support. Just like you see, Arjuna is sitting in the chariot with a bow in his hands and Krishna is taking the ropes of the horses and is riding the chariot. So this picture of Krishna Arjuna actually portrays this very wonderful lesson. Do your best and leave the rest. We can do our best and then Krishna will take care of the rest. Because taking the rest means Krishna is the one who is riding the chariot. And He will offer the result to us, fruits to us. But what best we should do? We should not be sleeping in the chariot. We should take the bow and arrow and we should take initiative also in doing the work. I recently heard an interesting saying. He says that if you are thrown into water, you are not failure. He says. Why? You are not failure unless you simply stay there without endeavoring to swim. If you don't endeavor to swim, then you are a failure. If you are thrown into water, because if you don't swim, you will go down. And you will be drowned, you will suffocate and you will die. But even if you are thrown into water, if you endeavor to swim, or if you shout, then somebody will come and help you and lift you out of the water. So in that way, one need not fear the failures that come in our life, because it is the attitude to those failures. So I would like to read 2 points from here regarding this. You remember, I was telling you about threat percept. You remember that? So perceiving some situation as a threat. See here, it says, psychological causes of stress revolve around the fact as to how we mentally react to various events and problems around us, and how we look at the world and life in general. You are understanding? How we look at the world around us and situation around us. If we react to various things around us with negative emotions like anger, fear, hatred, jealousy, revenge, worries, irritation, frustration, anxiety, then they are bound to create stress. That means stress means what is your outlook, or how do you respond to the situations around you. One can react with negative emotions like fear, hatred, jealousy, all this. To illustrate, suppose there has suddenly been some problem in your car. One way to feel highly tense as to why it has happened. Another way is to take it as a way of life. That is, you are ready to accept any eventuality in life. That's why Lord Krishna says that verse 2.14. We'll decide that. Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukkada agama payino nitya tamstitiksha subharata. What Krishna says there? That in this world, sukha and dukkha, happiness and distress will come and go, like the seasons are coming and going. And one should know that they will come and go and tolerate them. Why should we tolerate them? One good thing about the dukkha is that it will not stay. It will come, stay for a while, and agama apayino anityaha. The dukkha is also temporary. So whenever you get fever or headache, you can still be happy. Why? Because it will not stay for all time. It will go away after 2-3 days. So that confirmation is there. So you can be peaceful whenever dukkha comes. Whenever sukha comes, one shouldn't jump too much up and down. Why? That will also go away after some time. That's why he's saying, Tam Sitikshisaru. No, have a cool head. Don't jump too much. Or don't cry too much. Just have a cool head, Krishna say. Tolerate it. So Prabhupada is saying, in summer season it is too hot. Still a lady goes into the kitchen and cooks. Because she performs her duty. She doesn't say that now it is summer, so I will not cook. She doesn't say. What is another example Prabhupada gives? In winter, Magashish month, now December, in the morning, you all have experience of chill water. I think you have a geyser, I think, is it? Yeah. So, actually, generally, in South India, we used to go to the temples, Vishnu temples, in Magashish month in the morning. So, chill water bath, when you take the first cup you put, it's very, very painful. But then after you put subsequent cups, you feel very fresh. But the hot water, when you put the first cup, oh, you feel so nice, cozy it is. The heat, when it touches the body in the winter, it looks very nice. But after you finish the bath, when you come out of the bathroom, you feel very cold. You see, So, Prabhupada gives the example saying that tolerate, learn to tolerate that. Okay, you are going in the car, suddenly the car tire has become puncture. Sometimes I have seen how people respond. When car tire becomes puncture, some neighbor tells him, hey, your car tire is puncture. And then he comes out of the car. And then he kicks the car, like that, with his leg. Because there is anger in the mind. Because now it's going to waste my time and all that, yeah. But you only wanted the car, so you have to maintain it. Isn't it? So we have to learn to tolerate them. So the outlook can be different of different people. So he's saying, hence, psychological causes of stress can be very easily eliminated by readjusting your attitudes and reactions to various things of life. Here comes a very important point. Events or various incidents themselves don't create stress. It is only our attitude and outlook towards them which creates stress. If we can learn to view everything in a positive way, it is impossible to be in stress. You understand, no? So events or incidents themselves don't create stress. It is our attitude and outlook towards them which causes stress. Now apply this on Arjuna. What is Arjuna's problem? He is going to the battlefield and he is considering himself the controller. So he is forgetting Krishna is the controller and he is looking at all the relatives, friends, and then he is facing fear of loss of life. So many of my relatives, friends will be killed, and then these symptoms are manifested. So his outlook, so this is actually perception. It's called perceived threat. Actually there is no threat, because Krishna is explaining to him later that when you kill these people, they are all sinful people whom you are killing. And by your killing, and when they die in the battlefield, they will go to heaven. So you are actually rewarding them heaven by killing them. If you don't kill them, these sinful guys, they are going to go to hell. Which is better for them? It's better to send them to heaven. And although Lord said that anyone who was in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, those who were killed are those who are looking at Krishna. All the warriors, they all went back to spiritual world and they all got their swarupam. Gata swarupam, Bhagavatam says that. So Arjuna is not doing anything inauspicious. But because he is not seeing from Krishna's point of view, he is seeing from his own point of view. That is why he is undergoing this fear. You understand? It's a wrong outlook. So there are many examples of perceived threat in our life. Like you think somebody doesn't like you. You imagine like that. Then you have fear. Then you have some kind of disturbance in the mind. Or sometimes you feel, you did a mistake and you don't want anyone to know it, but one devotee came to know it. And then you are a little doubtful how he came to know it, and you don't want him to tell anyone. So you want to go and tell him, Prabhuji, don't tell this to anyone. And then if you tell him that don't tell anyone, then he will think I am not very advanced. So I don't want to tell him either. So your mind is in turmoil. You understand, no? Yeah. Because I can never commit a mistake. Because mind perceives failure as good as death. Mind cannot tolerate failure. Yeah. So in this way we can find we have too many expectations around us. And because of our wrong outlook we suffer many times. It's all called perceived threat. Like, why this perceived threat we call it? Because actually ultimately even though we are fearful, whatever has to happen will happen. For example, I was telling you loss of a job or loss of money. If these things have to happen, they will happen. You remember I was telling you about Kartikeya and Rajaraman abroad in USA. The other day I was telling you, you had a big loss of money. Okay, if there is a big loss of money, so what? You have enough money for bread and butter, for maintaining your family. Because he has no ultimate goal of life. He doesn't see God in picture. He sees, I am the supreme controller. Now if I lost such a big money, what will the world think of me? So every fellow in this world wants to impress other people. So I have been impressing others, floating in the sky till now. Now that I have lost all the money, the world will ridicule me, mock at me. It is too difficult for me to tolerate. So what I will do? Commit suicide. That's what he did. Foolishly. You see? Because he didn't see a larger picture. He has been seeing a picture of I and mine. Very smaller picture, trying to impress the people of the world. Yeah. That's why he's saying our outlook. If the same thing happened to a devotee lost big money, of course he may cry and he may want to be more careful in future or something. But ultimately, the things are not in our hands. They are in Krishna's hands. That's why we say, Jo hua, achha hua. Jo ho raha hai, jo hoga, achha hi hoga. This is very appropriate for a devotee. If you can understand these three sentences, then you have no anxiety in this world. Okay, if I have to be laid off from a job, say I am laid off from a job, what you will do? Will you have to commit suicide because I am laid off? No. You can chant and dance more. Until you get the next job, isn't it? You should be prepared for that. Yeah, we don't have to worry because ultimately there are things which are beyond us to control. That's why Stephen Covey also talks about the circle of influence and circle of concern. Yes, we have many concerns, but not all concerns are within our influence. For example, say you are working in a company, a promotion is coming. Now you want the promotion. Because if you get promotion, they will send you to Germany and then you can get monthly 2 lakh rupees, can make. But another fellow has come from another IIT or NIT, and then he is very, very talented. And your mind is worrying, why this fellow is so talented? You know? And that too, he may be talented, but why did he join the same company? Fool, he could have gone to some other company. Mind sometimes cribs, you know. And that too in the same company, same department also. And competing with me. If he is competing with somebody else, I wouldn't mind. He is in the same department. And adding to that, he has also learned German. That makes my situation even more worse. And then your mind is thinking, let something happen to this fellow so that I will get promotion. At last when promotion comes, you find he is given promotion. Then mind breaks down, alas. And one may feel like crying. Why did I not get opportunity? This is how the material mind works. If one is a devotee thinks, you know, okay, if I get promotion, I will earn more money in a short time. If I am getting the promotion. Despite all your disqualifications, still you may be chosen. Because you have a good attitude. But if the promotion doesn't come to me, that means Krishna doesn't want me to have the promotion. Because he is controller of my boss also. He is my controller and controller of my boss's brain also. If Krishna wants, he can tune his brain in such a way that he will give me promotion. See, this is advantage of understanding Krishna's role. We can be very cool and peaceful. Jo hua, acha hua. And then you find this fellow, he went to Germany and then suddenly they came to know that the German branch or something, it collapsed. And the whole thing, you know, the company went down. And when this fellow returned back to India, they threw him out of the company. Then you understand, thank God, I didn't get promotion. Isn't it? If I was put in that position, then I would be out of the company. So why, what happens, why it happens, it's beyond us to know many times. Krishna can know what we cannot know. So that is why he is saying, events or incidents themselves don't create stress. It is our attitude and outlook towards them which creates stress. So we should always have a positive attitude. A devotee, when suffering comes, a devotee says, Krishna, I deserve this and I deserve much more. Because I am a sinner, I have done so many mistakes in my life, in this life also, what is because of previous lives. I deserve this and much more. And when Krishna gives some promotion, happiness, joy, then you may wonder, Krishna, I think you have sent happiness to the wrong address. I don't deserve this at all. You are giving me so much joy, so much happiness. You are supplying me. I think you want to encourage me. You are giving me a pat on the back. Thank you very much. I will always remember these good things you have done for me with a grateful heart. Either one should feel. Similarly, he says one or two sentences about attachment. I would like to read. So I was telling you that Arjuna is developing attachment for his relatives and friends, right? See what he says here. Material objects themselves are not the problem. It is our attachment towards them which creates the problem. Any form of yoga, like, you know, Ashtanga yoga, Jnana yoga, Bhakti yoga, they all encourage us to have a healthy attitude towards material objects. What is a healthy attitude? He says, we have to develop detachment and dispassion towards the worldly objects and events. Then the pleasure and pain automatically lose hold on us. We are released from the tight rope of pleasure and pain. We develop a deep attitude of equanimity towards all pleasures and pains. and remain equipoised in most adverse circumstances, and neither elated by gains nor depressed by losses. No worldly situation can disturb our inner peace and balance. Real happiness does not reside in the objects, but in the state of mind, which is independent of these objects. The true happiness is an intrinsic property of our inner self or the soul. True happiness is an intrinsic property of the soul. Anandamayo vyasat, intrinsic property of the soul. We are not getting any happiness from objects outside of us. We should be convinced about it. Happiness is already there in the soul, and there is relationship with Krishna. We are not getting happiness from television, we are not getting happiness from laptop, computer, we are not getting happiness from jobs, we are not getting happiness from beautiful women, we are not getting happiness from the currency notes or dollar notes, we are not getting happiness from post or position awarded to us by the company. It depends on how much are we attached. For example, say a boy gets an appointment order from a company that we are offering you the post of a graduate engineering trainee in our company and your pay and perks is this much. I remember when I first got an appointment order, I felt so proud. We are appointing you as a senior design executive. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, you have kindly accepted me as a executive in your company. Such a sweet name, executive. And then you are also, in those days you are paying me some 8,400 rupees in Thermax company, you know, which may be equivalent to some 50,000 rupees now. So, you are paying me salary, you are giving me a designation, you are giving me a post, and I will become your loyal dog. I will serve you. So later on, after years passed away, when I became Brahmachari, I thought, you know, who is this fellow to give me a designation? My real designation is Jeevara Sarupohai Krishna Mithridas. I am simply servant of Krishna. So, this is what I am saying is a very, very deep thing. Actually, because I was attached to that post and position, I felt that that post is giving me some happiness. And if that post is taken away, then I may cry. You understand? If I am seeing that the post, now, after I became Brahmachari, now I laugh at that. If some company tells me now, would you like to join us as senior design executive? Or even senior design manager, we will say, get lost. Who wants any post from you? What would you like to do? I would like to be a beggar. Just chanting Krishna's name and dancing, that's all. Because now those posts are no more attractive for me. But at that time, they were very attractive. You understand, no? So if something gives me pleasure, the very same thing can give me pain also. That is the nature of material objects. Actually, we cannot blame that object. We have to blame our attitude towards that object. Like sometimes, you know, people say, oh, Prabhuji, you know, Mataji, how they are dressing here in America, you know, they are not dressing properly, you know, they are semi-naked, semi-clad and everything, you know, dangerous and everything. Actually, see, the objects are same, but you are looking at them, and we are disturbed because there is problem here, problem is here. With that problem inside our mind. So there are problems inside our mind and there are sense objects outside. Inside our mind, because of the impure mind, what happens? The impure mind has many, many impure desires which the mind wants to execute. And the sense objects outside, they become attractive to an impure mind. When one looks at those sense objects, then the mind wants to engage in wrongdoings, wrong activities, and that is why one feels mental disturbance. When mind is purified, even externally, the sense objects may be existing, same objects may be existing. When the mind is purified, then they don't disturb a person at all. So the objects cannot be blamed, the sinful mentality or the enjoying mentality in the mind, that is to be blamed. You understand? Which causes the attachment. Yeah. Like for example, sometimes a boy joins the ashram, but because of attachment he goes back. The parents, because he has attachment. Parents are parents, everyone has parent. Why one has to go back completely? Because one has attachment. So Arjuna was very attached to his bodily relationships and friends and relatives and uncle and everything. So attachment is a very dangerous thing. Why? Dhritarashtra was attached to Duryodhana because of which the whole Kurukshetra Yuddha took place. If Dhritarashtra did not put pleasure before conscience, if Dhritarashtra was ready to understand that Duryodhana is going wrong and strongly chastised and corrected him, the entire Kurukshetra battle would have been saved. Because of attachment, he did wrong things. Yeah. In the same manner, in company also, in company scenario, for example, somebody may have attachment to money, somebody may have attachment to post and position, and somebody may have attachment to someone and aversion for another. So then he may act in a partial way. Correct? Attachment can make us partial. Like for example, somebody is unqualified, you may offer him promotion rather than offering promotion to a qualified man because you are partially attached to him. Correct?
Yeah.
But the company may not benefit from your attachment. The company may benefit from talent, but our attachment may... And these things people do, you have seen, no? In sometimes in government offices, people try to pull in, relatives, friends for a particular post, and although that fellow is not very talented. So a talented fellow is rejected, and the less than talented fellow is put in because of middle attachment. Yeah, people do such things, yeah. And also, as I said, the same objects which give us pleasure can become the cause of pain for us. Now Arjuna is thinking, if I don't do this battle, I will enjoy with these relatives. I will be happy with them. Because he is considering material pleasure independent of surrendering to Krishna. That is why he is also feeling material pain now. You understand, no? He is asking Krishna, like if somebody goes to Dubai and earns a lot of money, huge money, and comes back, then he can share with his relatives and friends and enjoy. But Arjuna is asking, what is the use of my doing such a thing? Because after the battle, I will not be able to proudly show my relatives that I have done something. They will all be dead and gone. Kim no rajena govinda, kim bhogar jivitena vah, how can I enjoy? Which means he is considering his own pleasure only. He is not asking Krishna, what will give you pleasure? Like that he is saying. Yeah. For the pleasures that come from the world, Bhagavata also says, for the pleasures that come from the world, bear in them sorrows to come. They come and go. They are transient. This is the Matra special verse. In fact, wise men never seek for sensual pleasures deliberately and thus remain freed from the pains associated with them. You understand? Pain and pleasure are like two sides of a coin. So, wise men, they don't derive pleasure from the sense objects of this world. Do you know why? Because by rejecting the pleasures, you also reject the pain also. How? Like you have head side of a coin which you like, but you throw the coin away. I don't want the head side. You throw the tail side also. So when you reject the pleasures of the world, you also reject the pains also. Yeah. Because pain exists only when there is pleasure. So that is very simple. There is a very simple formula that if you don't want pains, avoid running after pleasures also. Hence, rather than becoming attached to the sensation of pleasure and trying to hold on to it while pushing the pain away, that's what people want. Hold on to pleasure, I want the pleasure and push the pain away. It's like catching head side of a coin and pushing the tail side. Again and again both keep coming. He's saying, simply witness them like a detached observer and take note of their coming and passing with full control of your mind. So, for a jnani, he can observe like a detached observer, pleasures and pains coming, apuryamanam achala pratishtam, samudram apapravishanti, other like that. But for a devotee, he can take help from Krishna. He can develop attachment to Krishna. And that can help us to rise above attachment to the material objects of this world, to relatives, friends. And, for example, when we develop attachment to Krishna, when we are... for example, if one is working in an office, one will be able to execute one's duties very peacefully. Why? Because the material attachment draws a lot of our energy. Tremendous energy. For example, your father goes to a company. He always thinks of the child, a newborn child at home. He will make a phone call and tell, how is the child making sound? Please make the sound near the phone. I can hear. See that he is attached. When a fellow is newly wedded, is attached to his wife. And after 4 or 5 years when child is born, then he is attached to his children. And if there is some small problem at home, his whole job in the company gets disturbed. You'll find. Why? Because the whole mind is at home. And he's not doing any work. And you ask him, what happened? Mood out. Oh, really? What happened? No, my wife is in the hospital, you know. She's having some serious problem. So, okay, she's having a problem, but why are you not doing work? Because there's attachment. Now I'm just thinking about the problem. You understand, no? So mental attachment can actually make us weak even in our execution of duty. Can easily see that. But if we learn to develop attachment to Krishna, then you may say, okay, wife is in the hospital or somebody is having some problem. What can I do about it? I can at the best take her to hospital, admit her, and then my job is done. Now it's up to Krishna when to get her well. Isn't it? And then you go on with your duty. That is why devotees are free from this ropes of attachment. For example, you are sitting in the train. Say somebody has put a luggage in the top of the berth. Do you have any attachment to it? It's not your luggage, it's somebody else's luggage. Your luggage is below. Now, do you have any problem with that luggage in the top? Does your mind even ever think about it? No. Similarly, you have a vehicle, car, your car and somebody else's car. Somebody else's car, you have no problem. Because we don't have any attachment for it. But if it is my luggage in the top of my berth, and somebody is climbing up in the berth, immediately our antenna stands up. What is this? This fellow is climbing up. Maybe he is going to open my bag. He will not do it. But our mind imagines. He will take out some valuable. There is no valuable inside. Only clothes are. Till we think. People, you see how people are attached to their bags. Then you put the bag on the opposite side. You keep watching time to time. You are supervising. Some devotees chant. Arekshna, Arekshna, Arekshna. And then I used to tell them, you take the bag and keep on your lap only. You know, keep on your lap and chant peacefully. You know. So just like this attachment to your bag, see, bag is a gross thing. But there are many subtle attachments, many, many baggages in our mind. That you only know what all attachments you have. If you think deeply, you can know. Attachment about this worry, that worry. Big, big baggages are there. That tie a person. But when a devotee is chanting Krishna's names and develops deep faith in Krishna, the devotee knows that, everything is in Krishna's control. Devotee has no faith. That doesn't mean you have to be careless about the bag. Okay, Krishna will take care, I am sleeping now. You keep the laptop in the top and you go to sleep. No. We should take care, we should be responsible for what Krishna has given us. But we don't be taking unnecessary anxiety. Be fully responsible. So, don't develop attachments. Mental attachment. So, Krishna says in 7.1, Maya Sakta Manapartha, develop attachment to me, he says. Don't develop attachment to material things. So here Arjuna is in trouble and stress. Why? Because of these two things. Fear of the material situation and attachment to the material bodies of the material relatives. Because of these two things, Arjuna is getting stressed. And we can rise above stress very easily in our lives by accepting and understanding Krishna is the ultimate controller of all situations, the whole world, the whole creation, whole universe, including our body and mind and everything. And we can also understand Krishna is our ultimate father, ultimate friend. You all have heard the famous verse. Tvamyeva mata chapita tvameva, tvameva bandushcha sakha tvameva, tvameva vidya dravinam tvameva, tvameva sarvam mama deva deva. My dear Lord, you are my mother, you are my father, you are my relative, you are my friend, you are my learning, and you are my wealth, and you are everything for me, he says. So when a devotee is in this consciousness, then a devotee can develop attachment to Krishna. And we should rise above. It's not that you should not love your mother and father and friends and relatives. You can love them, but we have to know they are also going to pass away, we also will pass away. Everyone will come to pass in this world. Their material bodies will not remain. And we should not become attached. You can develop affection. That is all right. At the same time, if you are really affectionate to your relatives and friends, give them Krishna consciousness. That's the best gift you can give them. Like one devotee told me, that if you are attached to your sisters and mother and father and everyone, then you give them Krishna consciousness, then they will be in Goloka Vrindavan. Then you will also go there. Then you can meet them there. But if you don't give them Krishna consciousness, you know, you may go to North India and they may go to South India. Then you get lost. You go to another family, they go to another family. So our real attachment can be dovetailed in Krishna service by giving them Krishna consciousness. So Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. Clear to you, everyone? Very wonderful knowledge.